SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races. We'll call it the start of hour three. We were late into hour two. We're early to hour three. And Nick Tamarote joins us on the heels of a typically rollicking Ron Paolucci visit. Nick, good morning.
Good morning. I actually got a phone call from Ron Paolucci this morning. So he's been an enterprising man, even more so than normal today.
Yeah. There's a
little spring in his step. As if he needed
it's just
it.
Unbelievable. He's really infectious, and you know, number of people don't know, you know, how to take Ron. I mean, but you to me, and I met him early. I mean, early on, even before Re-Antonia won that Breeders' Cup, had met him at Gulfstream that previous winter. And so when he burst on the scene for people, and he's just 130 horses in training, helping any number of smaller outfits, and really somebody that we can't get enough of, honestly. What he does is invaluable.
No question. The game is better for having a guy like him, and, you know, though he may, I suppose he rubs some people the wrong way with his bravado and panache and whatever else you want to call it. I think that if the game had more of that, we'd be in a much better place. He's also willing to, and I think he would even tell you, he's willing to take it to an extreme at times in terms of running horses in ambitious spots. But, you know, we have almost none of that going on right now. So it's okay for somebody to actually be doing it. And I noticed in doing the buyer figures in Ohio for a couple of years just how successful he is there. And everybody who thinks, you know, oh, Ron Paolucci must just be a sea of red ink in his racing operation, take a look at the Thistledown or Belterra results during the summer and see how many races he's winning there and really taking advantage of an Ohio-bred program with a great purse structure and a real opportunity. So it's if you want to call him something, call him Sly Like a Fox.
Well, and he bought some horses the last 2 days at OBS, three Ohio breds, and he managed to find some clever stallions, including Tale of Akati, Real Solution, and Can the Man. And he got three
Can
horses.
The Man. Wow, I didn't realize he was at stud in Florida. Must be right.
Yeah, and well, he's had a good season with his 2 year olds.
Yeah. How about that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
He you bought, know. Luch had an Ohio-bred by Uncle Mo named Mo Don't Know, who
still
won.
Does.
He had to have won $500,000 in 2 years. I mean, he was just winning races left and right. He would win it. He would win it six furlongs. He would win it a mile and a quarter in the endurance race at the end of the year. And, you know, it just went to show you that if you have a horse by obviously a commercial stallion that you can take advantage of the breeding program in some of these states, then, you know, it's a huge opportunity.
Agreed. And he was already established in Ohio when, you know, the new Ohio as we know it, the landscape changed, and he was well positioned. So there's a lot of different ways to approach this game, and Ron tries them all. We had so much fun, Nick, going back to last week and into Saturday, and watched the leaderboard, and I'll tell you, Philly Joe starting to put board hits and trophies on the shelf. Another good effort for Joe.
I'll tell you, it was Joe's really found a little groove in the way he likes to play, and I kind of joked with him and told him that he's the ultimate contest small ball player. He likes to play his doubles and he'll just kind of keep it going that way, build a little bit of momentum, and it's worked out well. So no, he had a good showing, and little did we think that even with this he made a move forward in the Belmont. Marshall actually lost, I want to say, $4,000 in the Belmont and still stayed in position to get an NHC spot because really nobody moved. And the error that some of us made in planning out how we were going to bet the Belmont was not realizing that if Justify had won, then it was going to be difficult for anybody to really make up a lot of ground. And I think having that idea in mind that last year the winning score in this tournament was around $100,000, I think that's what a lot of us were stuck on. And it was a mistake that I made. I took a very big swing at a Justify Hofburg Cold Exacta and Justify Tenfold Cold Exacta, and instead of playing it so that they were split, I played it with them on top, which, of course, in retrospect was a mistake, and it happens. But, it was a good showing for Joe, and it was actually the lowest winning total for that tournament in the 3 years, but it was a great job by Karen Carey, who let me know that she's a listener to the show, her and her sons. They hit a $100 straight try in the Met Mile, and then I think came back and hit something in the... I think something very small in the Manhattan, just to make sure that she maintained her lead. So, yeah, she got the job done, got $35,000, I think like $65,000 in prize money in a 2019 Belmont Stakes Challenge seat. So, worked out well and made for a fun weekend.
Very much. Let's talk about some more wagering, because had a request on Derby Trail after the weekend. And between, you know, a number of opinions that went right and a sequence late second half of the card on Saturday, enjoyed a big weekend. Thursday and Saturday were good. And in fact, I don't know what more could have gone right. But I did get the request about the ticket formulation portion, Nick, and how people can, you know, go back and look at the results and determine, I mean, if they made mistakes in their ticket building, if they were happy with their handicapping, you know, where things could go wrong, and whether it was multis or, you know, single race analysis and structure, hit on some of the places where, you know, you were alluding, some things that went right and some things that went wrong, and, you know, what you would learn from it going forward.
Yeah, you know, I think the one of the most important things, of course, is to be able to plan out as much as you can, because you're going to make a lot of decisions on the fly, and you're going to have to make a lot of decisions in a snap kind of way. But when you can, and of course, this differs for me from a conventional day of betting versus a contest, and in a contest setting, you're going to be looking at many more opportunities to bet once you've gotten yourself into position. And when I did after the Woody Stevens, my plan, of course, at that point was to bet every race. And I didn't properly bet my opinion, and that's kind of the biggest regret that I have, is that I probably had better opinions than my score would show for it, but certainly than my overall wagering for the weekend would show for it. So those are that's really the hard part, is balancing out where you have good opinions and where you make smart wagers. And, you know, I made a relatively smart wager at the end of Friday's card in playing the late pick five, and not necessarily relying too heavily on Sister Charlie, using Four Star Crook as a B, and then liking the Grand Motion horse who won the last. And basically at that point, that was all you needed. You know, same kind of thing with the pick five on Saturday, knowing that I really liked Still Having Fun and believing that Spring Quality was a horse who had the opportunity to win. Then the other three winners, of course, were all very basic, Raving Beauty, Be Jersey, and Justify. So it's balancing those opinions as much as you possibly can. And when you're making a multi-race bet, even if you're not a believer in the ticket maker type of structure, it's important for you to assign one of those letters to the horses in that field. It's important for you to determine who are your A's, who are your B's, who are your C's, and maybe you're going to use that in a format where you structure exactas or you structure trifectas or superfectas. But if you're making a multi-race bet, you need to know what your opinion is on those individual horses and then bet accordingly. And the good thing about that is that it's going to give you an opportunity afterwards to come back and say, well, why was Spring Quality a B? You know, was Spring Quality a B, but Channel Maker was an A, and was that a bad decision, or is that a race where you're supposed to say, well, hey, if all of us were believing that Robert Bruce was, you know, almost a deserving favorite, a deserving second choice, then why were we not really putting Spring Quality on the same playing field, knowing that it was a second off the layoff situation, and so on and so forth. And then at the same time, you know, a chaos race like the Woody Stevens, if you believed in Still Having Fun, well, who else were your A's? You know, where it was World of Trouble, Strike Power, so on and so forth. So what I'm getting at is that you want to, you you want to take your opinion and you want to make it so that it can be kind of critiqued and cross-referenced moving forward, and you can understand maybe some of the times you make mistakes, because you're undoubtedly going to. And on these big days where if you're going bad on one of these days, I mean, it will absolutely just subjugate you. But at the same time, if you're right once, you'll be fine. So that's where I think you want to manage your bankroll as much as possible and pick out what pools you want to get involved in and how you want to structure your wagers, because it's a massive undertaking.
And spring quality is as good a talking point as any, because here's a horse that had so much going for it, and when you looked at the properties of the horse, and I guess this is sort of a good juncture to mention, when you're handicapping and you're looking at the pure, as mentioned, the properties of the horse on paper, and then juxtapose between the assignment and the incidentals, how the pace is going to unfold, and potentially, well, in his case in particular, his positioning. He was drawn poorly, or at least, you know, on paper, drawn poorly for what you thought would be his approach. And I picked him fourth, and would have probably picked him second. Probably, I suppose if he was drawn better at 12-1, I would have maybe even picked him as the best value on top or as second choice. Because as you had said, and I agreed, he and Robert Bruce, with a little Beach Patrol, and then in terms of a, you know, big price, Channel Maker, those were my four horses. If Spring Quality is drawn better than the 13, you probably lean on him more heavily. The difference between him being an A and a B, and if you're a small budget, you may have even relegated him to a C because you thought, how's he going to win from there if Edgar has to go forward and be part of what looks like a legitimate pace? You couldn't have imagined, Nick, that Edgar was going to pull a rabbit out of his hat from 15 years ago and turn in one of the best rides maybe of his career.
No question about it. I was actually going to say more or less exactly that. It really was. And going back and looking at it, you could really, I was amazed at what a good ride it was and how he had a plan. Because I think it's easy to critique jockeys, obviously, especially, you know, when you're gambling. But it's a little more difficult to understand that they have to make a series of split-second decisions. And, you know, without it sounding like a mountain of sour grapes, you look at the ride that Jose Ortiz gave Channel Maker, and it was terrible. You know, he had no plan. His plan was to drop back as far as he could and then wait as long as he could and try and pick his way through traffic, which was a huge mistake. Now, I will say that he was attempting to get outside when they got to the top of the stretch, but he was completely outmoved by Javier Castellano, and that was why Saddler's Joy, more or less in comparison to a horse like Channel Maker, had the run of the race. Now, Spring Quality, who was wide the entire way, he certainly took the worst of that 13 post, but the best thing that Edgar did was he made sure the horse wasn't going to get mired in any kind of traffic problems. And knowing that you put 13 on the grass at a mile and a quarter at Belmont with a long run to the first turn, in all likelihood, that pace is going to heat up, and it became very clear down the backstretch that it was strong. And I think what you want to do at that point is make sure that you avoid that, you know, that mid-stretch melee that everybody was sort of going through looking to find a space and to get a spot to run, whereas, you know, you could look at it and say he should have tried to save ground, but hell, Edgar stayed in the clear, and that was what made the difference. So it was a good way to handle a poor post position, but luckily it was with a horse who seems as if he's always been comfortable running on the outside, and his rider just astutely took advantage of it.
Let's also use our mutual appreciation of Tim Keefe's Still Having Fun, and this gets into a conversation about taking a horse that you understand is going to have a favorable scenario and then doing your utmost to take advantage. And that included, you know, obviously, whether it's a win bet at 13-1, whether it's keying him with the obvious horses, and you know, it's funny, Tina hit the T Tina's using my picks, and she hits the super for a dime. And I'm not a super batter, so I was quite content with the try. But WynnBET reverse exact the key with still having fun. I mean, everything pointed with him turning back, with there being plenty of pace. This was one of those spots on a card, and it's early enough where you should still be pretty flush. I mean, you should still have plenty of bankroll to leverage your opinion on a horse like this.
Yeah, without question. And that worked out well. You know, I think it's going to become clear to everybody that in the Woody Stevens, you probably want to open yourself up to as many closers as possible, especially if there's real speed on paper. I don't think we could have ever planned on that pace heating up as much as it did. I mean, as fast as the track was, that was a pace that was faster than we had seen almost ever in the Woody Stevens. So it worked out great, and boy, I'll tell you, he much maligned. There is nobody in the game that you want on and off the pace horse more than Joel Rosario, and that was a perfect example. He knew when to stay still, he knew when to move, and he got him into a position where he could win. So it was a very, very good ride, and it always looked in a way as if he was going to get that perfect run of the race, and he did. So it was something that sometimes it pans out. So it was a good plan that worked out, and I think it was. And I also, it's worth saying, and it's not taking anything away from him, but what I saw immediately thereafter with regards to people assessing the race and stuff is that, oh my God, you know, look at what this says about Mottoli. And don't get me wrong, Mottoli is a very, very good horse. But one of the reasons why I like Still Having Fun was if you're a believer at all in pace, especially a service like Timeform US where the pace is, pace figures are made, Craig makes them, that was a slow pace that Mottoli set. So the reason why you like Still Having Fun is because he made this big, wide move into a very slow pace on a track that was very conducive to speed horses. So that was what made him the horse you wanted to bet out of it. Now, that's not saying that Mottoli's not going to go and run in a race like the Amsterdam and just blast them off the track because he's that much quicker. So it was just a little bit of an aside in terms of what you maybe could deduce from that performance. But there's no doubt that Still Having Fun did get a very favorable pace set up and took advantage of it. And how about the race that Promises Fulfilled ran? You know, if he's able to put that together, he's very much a keep it going. He's a King's Bishop type horse, and really, he's probably a Breeders' Cup Sprint type of horse too, to be able to withstand that kind of pace and still be in the frame at the finish.
Well, and I fold in World of Trouble too, because
exactly World of Trouble as well. Right, right.
He was right with him. It is a rare collapse scenario that you look at a chart and you see Promises Fulfilled in World of Trouble, first and second at the quarter mile and the half mile mark. The winner was 10th at the quarter. The second place finisher Engage was 6th. The fifth place finisher Beautiful Shot was 9th. And Give Me a Minute was 11th. So you had the 9th, 10th, and 11th horses, and then a midfield horse in Engage, while these two are throttling each other, 43-3 for the half mile, and yet they're only beaten 5 lengths. I mean, it is amazing. In any typical scenario, they'd be 8th and 10th.
Oh, they would have virtually eased, exactly.
Yeah.
No, it would have been... It would have not gone well. So no, it was a pretty unbelievable performance by those two, and you know, just if they can continue on that way. Look, Promises Fulfilled has always been a very, very talented horse. Now, fortunately, it seems as if the two chances to go long did not really adversely affect him. Unfortunately, it looks like it did with Strike Power, who maybe is just going to need some more time off. But if those two continue to run in these big three-year-old sprint races, which I imagine they'll both probably be in a race like the Amsterdam, then it'll certainly be very interesting, especially when you add in a horse like Mottoli, who does seem like he might be the fastest of the fast. But he's going to have his running shoes on to keep up with those two.
Well, Nick, we're going to end up in a bit of a jackpot here because it's been a busy morning. Quick final thoughts on Justify's win and the Triple Crown season?
Oh, I mean, it was thrilling, you know, to have been there. And we always talk about this, but to have talked with you right after he broke his maiden, then to have been having been there when he won the one other than, you know, he was a horse that I've always been very fond of, and to see what he's been able to do in a very short period of time really is amazing. I mean, I don't know how much more you could say about him in terms of just his overall quality and what he's proven in a brief period of time. I think, you know, obviously I'm not even going to dignify the stuff about how the machinations of other jockeys may have affected the outcome. I don't know how, and I've had this conversation with a few different people, especially people whose opinions I respect, but given what happened at any point in Justify's career, if somebody wants to tell me that had Noble Indy been at his neck the entire way down the backstretch, he would have somehow lost to Gronkowski. I mean, I haven't seen a three-year-old that can beat him. I haven't seen a three-year-old, I think, that when he's put to the test could even come close. So he's a dominant horse from a stable that clearly has proven itself to be, certainly without question, the best of the modern era when it comes to three-year-olds, and really anybody for that matter, on the dirt. So, yeah, credit to everybody who was involved there. And he was definitely a deserving winner. You know, without causing an argument about it, I was a little happier this time than in 2015, and it has nothing to do with anything other than I just like Justify better than I liked American Pharoah. You know, and people could feel however they want to feel about that or disagree with me. He's just a horse that I have been a little bit more of a fan of, and maybe I was in on the hype in the first place rather than having to sort through everybody else's. But either way, he's very deserving of it, and it's certainly going to be good to see another placard out in the infield when one of these is on the line again.
Well, tremendous, and glad you were around for the whole run. Let's quickly hit a couple of highlights, some betting thoughts. We got the poker on Sunday in New York. We've got Foster Night at Churchill tomorrow. A couple of plays.
I'll tell you, the Foster's a fun race, and you know, I don't know if maybe it's just wondering if all of it took place last time, but Backyard Heaven still makes me a little nervous. He's clearly the horse to beat. The interesting thing about the way this race is going to unfold is that I think it's become pretty clear that Irish War Cry is at his best when he's on the lead, and so I think that'll be the plan coming out of the gate. Will Irad let Jose clear and then try and set up outside, similar to what he did outside of Always Dreaming in the Ali Sheba? You know, it would stand to reason that would be the trip that would make the most sense. And then what kind of say in it will Uncle Mojo have, even Endor Honorable Duty, who's got a little speed from the inside. So I'm interested to see if Backyard Heaven is up to the test, and I think he's clearly a deserving favorite. If you want a horse that maybe could get in there, seems to always find a way to get a piece at a price, Hawakam is obviously one that you'll give a little bit of a look to, and he's a horse that probably should have been second in this race last year, but got steadied pretty badly around the quarter pole. The Fleur-de-Lis is a good race. I thought Elate was going to come back in this race, but I guess she's awaiting an objective a little bit later on. There's should be a pretty serious pace in here with both Farrell and Apology Not Accepted drawn towards the outside. And if both are ridden the way they've been in order to have most success, then I think you'll see things heat up a little bit. That should set the table for a horse like Valadorna. She's a little difficult to trust, but between she and Song of Spring, I think there's going to be enough of a setup for them. So I don't know how much deeper you'll need to go in any of the multis. I could see you maybe throwing in Awestruck, who finally looks like she's put it together, but is taking a pretty big jump in class. The Wise Dan has turned up one of the best races I think you'll find anywhere this, you know, this weekend. And, World Approval is a horse to beat, of course. Obviously, you can't be too thrilled about a horse that ran poorly last time and has now missed a couple of spots that he was supposed to run in. I know he didn't miss the Dixie. Of course, it came off the turf, but there was some chatter about where else he might go and whether he's going to be at his best. I have to bet Mr. Misunderstood in this race. I know he was entered in the opening verse on Derby Week and scratched, and I think it was just to give him a little bit more time. He had run a couple of races in a pretty tight window there between Fairgrounds and Keeneland. He was off poorly in the Makers 46 mile. There was no pace in front of him whatsoever. The Keeneland turf course was extremely kind to horses on the inside the whole meet. This horse made a huge wide move down the outside. He might not be good enough to beat World Approval. I'll have an exacta under World Approval because I think he is good enough to beat everybody else. And the hope there is that you're just not getting the World Approval that we saw throughout 2017.
Excellent. Anything else?
No, I think the Belmont card's okay. I haven't really spent a whole bunch of time on it. Was waiting. Of course, was looking forward to betting the pick six tomorrow night, and so I can thank Ron Pellucci for that. But one of the things. I'm sure he's the type. He'd be willing to cede it for Churchill. He'd
put the you're right. Back in. You're right about that. That's good. That's a good line.
Yeah. Still a good card, no doubt.
Thanks so much. A great Triple Crown season, and we'll start to push toward things like Stars and Stripes a couple of weeks away, shaping up fabulous, including Mendelsohn making a foray, not to the Belmont Derby, but to the Dwyer.
To the Dwyer. So, how about that?
Yeah. Talking Dwyer, Pennsylvania Derby, and Breeders' Cup Classic. So not everybody scared away by Justify. Nick, have a great weekend. We'll talk next week.
You too, Steve. Take care.
Always terrific. And Tam, 1215. Let's take a break. We're in trouble here with 40 minutes. I don't know how we're getting to everything. DeRosa Hammer and Nick Luck for the Royal Ascot preview. Stay with us. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky Tracks for Horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF past performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Feeling like a boss and staring at the stars. It doesn't matter the cost, 'cause everybody wants to be famous. Some call the shots, so see you over a bar. It doesn't matter the cost.
We're back at the races, and Ed DeRosa, we got Ed for just a quick hit, and Ed, I apologize, but things stacked up, and who knew? You and Nick knew, because he called you and Nick and me about the tax ramifications of his hit, but we didn't know when we woke up that Ron Paolucci would be a surprise visitor off the $550,000 score. Good morning.
Well, good morning. Yeah, always happy for a fellow Ohioan. And when we saw the ticket was from Northfield Park, we had our suspicions, and glad for Luke to confirm an incredible score, and for him to talk everyone through it. And, you know, he put a little more into it than maybe, you know, most of us would on a day-to-day basis, but by no means overly extravagant play that we've seen in some of these instances, and he's on quite a hot streak.
Very much, and a couple of people noting, you know, a buck and a quarter on Friday. Thursday he had the $53,000 pick five. In less than a week, has rung up, or exactly a week, has rung up an outlandish, almost $750,000. a career for anybody.
You know, looking at some of. You know, I have to think back at that pick five, but I don't even remember any tour, certainly not yesterday. I mean, it wasn't like he got lucky, for lack of a better word, and, you know, just caught some, you know, $200 no-hoper with an all-ball or anything. I mean, he's betting horses he wants to use and connecting the dots, and it's great to see the success, and certainly something I hope to taste today and tomorrow with the good racing ahead of us.
Big time. We'll talk about some opportunities first. You were in New York for the week. You're having a great time when we saw you. Didn't see you afterward, but some thoughts about Saturday.
Yeah, you know, Justify was a horse that I tried to beat around every bend, and he certainly got the best of me, but tip of the cap. I watched the race from about the eighth pole when American Pharoah won. I unfortunately couldn't be there, so this time around, wanted to make sure I was among the fans in the grandstand and the noise and all that. And it was great to witness. And, you know, I've always said whether, you know, I'm a fan from a gambling standpoint and want to bet a horse at 4 to 5 has absolutely nothing to do with the talents that occur on the track. And the accomplishment is certainly I enjoyed celebrating with the other 90,000 and the millions watching at home. So. It was a great series to be at Churchill for his training, and certainly looking forward to the next chapter. But, you know, not telling anyone something they don't know, but clearly he proved himself best. On the undercard, I'd say Monomoy Girl was the other one I really enjoyed.
Nice, nice. Well, it's amazing that those of us that watched one after another fall by the wayside in terms of Triple Crown tries. Amazing now that lucky enough to see two. And I particularly, you know, been on board for five of the six races that this horse has run in his career. The only thing I didn't see was the maiden win, and I did see that on TV. But I've tremendous affection for this horse, and he kind of, you know, captured my interest and commitment early on. I think as Nick was referencing earlier, it's not heresy to say that you enjoyed this one more than the other one. The other one, American Pharoah, was great because it broke down a barrier that seemed like it was never going to be broken. This was a spectacle.
Right.
Amazing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just looking back already, and I think as time passes, we'll really, think the Derby's the race that's really going to stick out that we appreciate about this horse. And looking at what Promises Fulfilled did in the Woody Stevens, I mean, any other race, and we've talked about it with Bodemeister before and other sprinters, I mean, what horse chases a horse like Promises Fulfilled and is not only there at the end, but is there at the end after rebuffing other challenges from grade one winners like Bolt D'Oro and Good Magic. So that just thinking back at that Derby and the horses that challenged him earnestly and to win and then come out of it and do what he did in the Preakness in Belmont. You know, I was wrong to play against, but just happy that, you know, we have these type of superstar horses that truly make you appreciate how special they are.
Very much. Well said. Ed, some plays. I know you got TV coming up at Churchill. Some plays for tomorrow.
Yeah. You know, I think the all stakes pick five super interesting because there's some obvious favorites to maybe lean on, but also maybe somewhat vulnerable. I'll say Blue Prize is my biggest key. I think she sort of offers that mix of most likely winner, but maybe not a universal single like Axeman might be world approval, supposedly has turned things around in the morning, but I don't necessarily see him as a cinch. And Backyard Heaven would probably be my second pick after Blue Prize. But yeah, Blue Prize is going to be the linchpin of that All Stakes pick five for me. Real quick in the Matt Wynn, I think King Zachary and Home Base are the alternatives. Either you use them under X-Man or you'd maybe try to upset the apple cart altogether, but I think both are interesting. And the Wise Dan, I mentioned World Approval, definitely off his last, doesn't merit much respect here at 4-5, but certainly at his best, he's a Breeders' Cup mile winner. But I thought Inspector Lineley at 10-1 was somewhat interesting, and he's definitely a horse I'll be peppering in with some of my other singles. And the Foster, I do have Backyard Heaven on top. Just seems the better of these. I wish he wasn't the high weight. That's the only thing where you could say, well, first against these types and carrying high weight.
Hawakam.
Thank you, Hawakam. I knew that wasn't right. Isn't impossible. I wish there was maybe a little more speed for him to chase, but again, the theme seems to be who the prices are, maybe underneath the favorites, and he would be one. And then in the Regret, Go Google Yourself, I think, is fastest. It's just a matter of turf. Beyond Blame stretches out, I think, is definitely a positive. Stave, I would love. I just worry about the outside post. Considering her only two loss, there was trouble and she was wide, and now she has post 13, so that's a concern. But those are the three I want most in the Regret.
Excellent. Well, it should be a really entertaining evening, and the parading of Justify, the awarding of the hardware to the Justify team when it comes to Derby, the cute little gold Derby trophy. And I'm sure there'll be a festive crowd. Ed, thanks for everything through the Triple Crown season, everybody at Twin Spires and Brisnet, and wish I could be there tomorrow. Happy Father's Day to you and the twins and Ed 3, and we'll talk next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Steve.
Ed DeRosa, everybody. EJXD2. And glad we got that in. And we are managing to bring every plane in safely for landings. And we'll stay right here the rest of the show. Hammer will join us as soon as we get a chance right now to talk to Nick Luck, who is getting ready to anchor the NBC coverage all next week, now Tuesday through Saturday next week, of Royal Ascot. Nick Luck, good morning.
Hello, Steve.
Nick, I see that they're really, NBC, pulling out all stops next week.
Yes. I'm thoroughly looking forward to it. It was terrific to be able to bring Ascot in its entirety to NBC Sports Network viewers last year. This year, broadly similar, but with a few added bells and whistles. So we will have a couple of extra cameras of our own to supplement the already excellent coverage that we'll be taking from the host broadcasters at ITV. Delighted that NBC Today program, Dylan Dreyer, will be joining me to add color to the event on Thursday, Friday, and the early part of Saturday. And Saturday's show in its entirety, beginning with the Royal Procession at 9 o'clock Eastern, will be on the main NBC network. So that's great. Straight after the morning programming there, we come on 9 o'clock with the Royal Procession, and then we'll have all six races live on NBC Saturday. All 30 races, that's right, across the 5 days. Will be either on NBCSN or NBC. So, yeah, good comprehensive coverage, hopefully, and lots to look forward to. I can never remember Ascot being so eagerly anticipated in this country, never mind in the U.S.
Well, from the U.S. side, we've been watching as Wesley Ward and his horses, as well as another quartet, make their way over, and Yoshida for the Queen Anne, which, of course, starts the entire five-day run, and day one, Nick, is always splashy. Three group ones and the group two, and it starts out with the Yoshida from Bill Mott's barn, and he's facing a tough group going the mile in the Queen Anne rhododendron, clearly the horse to beat.
Yeah, I think they're a good group. I don't think it's the greatest mile race at group or grade one level ever run. And if I was Bill Mott or Riley Mott or Winstar or a China Horse Club, I'd be quite hopeful of a big performance, I think. Hey, he's got to step up. He's got to produce a career best. There's no doubt about that. But as he's shown in his progressive form in the United States, he's a horse who probably is at his best over maybe 9 furlongs. Certainly that Churchill run makes it look like that. So a stiff, straight mile at Ascot where they go fast, and there'll be plenty of runners, should suit him, really. I think his good closing speed over a mile, we'll see him in good stead. It's just a question of whether he's quite good enough or whether he's quite conditioned enough for a race like this. But he looks the part. I think he's quite adaptable as regards surface. He probably wouldn't mind if there was a shower of rain, but I don't think we're going to get one between now and Tuesday. The ground will be on the quick side. And you say rhododendron is the horse to beat. It's essentially the Lockinge Stakes from Newbury is the form that Yoshida has to beat. Rhododendron beating Lightning Spear, Deauville Accidental Agent, all those horses coming out of that race. And you could chuck all those balls up in the air, and I wouldn't be surprised which order they came down in. I wouldn't say Rhododendron's absolutely guaranteed to confirm the form with Lightning Spear, who I thought should have probably beaten her at Newbury. I wouldn't rule out Accidental Agent from running a big race at a huge price. So it's open enough. It's open enough, that first race.
Ben Battle
depends which race they run him in. They could run him there, and he could run him in the Prince of Wales Stakes. There's upsides to both. In the Queen Anne, you don't have to take on Cracksman, who we'll come to, I'm sure, later. But in the Prince of Wales Stakes, you could argue maybe that he's more at home 10 furlongs. And that race is thinning out numerically. So if you're frightened of one horse, then maybe they'll go for the Queen Anne. If they're not frightened of one horse, I think they might go for the Prince of Wales. But I don't think it's absolutely confirmed which race he's going to run in yet.
Let's stick with the Group 1s for a minute. We'll talk about the two-year-olds more generally. The King's Stand, I talked to John Gunther on Monday, Nick, in the wake of Justify, and here's an opportunity for John and Tanya Gunther, without parole, the international campaigner, and really very much the horse to look at in the King's Stand.
In the St. James's Palace, you mean?
What did I say?
King's Stand.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sprint over 5. Yeah, which is a 3-year and co. And then the St. James's Palace is the round mile.
Yes, there you go.
3-year-old colt. So that's the spot that Without Parole will drop into, the St. James's Palace. And he'll be facing a pretty decent opposition. He obviously isn't going to be facing the English Guineas winner because he's Saxon Warrior and he's running the Derby, and he'll be going to the Irish Derby. He will be taking on, however, the Irish Guineas winner, Roman Eyes. He'll be taking on the runner-up in the English Guineas Tip to Win, the Giant Killer, the diminutive horse trained by a guy that only has a handful of horses who's massively punching above his weight. And he'll be taking on a whole bunch of just bubbling under top-class Ballydoyle horses headed by last year's champion juvenile U.S. Navy Flag, who, if he is going to win a big race this season, it might be this one, but yeah, Without Parole is the sexy horse in the race. He's undefeated in 3 starts. He's looked very impressive all 3 times. He was a bit short of peak conditioning when he won a stake at Sandown last time. The ground would have been unsuitably soft. His pedigree suggests he wants it better. He's already run very fast times, albeit in uncompetitive races. So we know he's fast enough to win big races. Whether he's conditioned enough to win a race like this remains to be seen, but he's very talented. He'll take a big chunk out of the market. He's trained by John Gosden. As you say, the Gunters, they've had this amazing season with their homebreds, with Justify and Vino Rosso. They actually still own this horse Without Parole. That would put the cherry on an already very rich cake for them.
Very much so. And regarding the King's Stand, here's the opportunity for Lady Aurelia, who has not won since last year's running and looks to repeat and has got Batash to deal with, Blue Point, who of course we saw going back to Dubai, a wonderful sprinter, some thoughts about the King Stand.
It's a cracking race. I think it's a truly compelling race. There's always been a notion, certainly in Europe, that five furlong horses were an inferior group to six furlong horses, but six furlong sprint races were really good championship races. And five furlongs, the older jockeys used to call five furlongs the lucky five. It was, you know, who's in front when the music stops. Not so with this group, I don't think. We've got Lady Aurelia. We know what she's done. She's completely freaked out at Ascot the last 2 years and any kind of repetition of those performances, and she's going to win again, even though she doesn't get the allowance this year for her age. She still gets the allowance for her sex, which some would argue is too much and why Philippe wins so many Group and Grade 1 races in Europe. At Batash, you and I were at Saratoga when Batash and Lady Aurelia ran in the Nunthorpe. Neither of them won. It was billed as the Great Clash. But Batash, you'll know my regard for him. I think he's a super talented horse. The question mark for him is whether he's able to control his exuberant temperament in the preliminaries, the cauldron-like atmosphere on a hottish day. If he can keep a lid on it, then he's a horse who can beat any five furlong horse in the world on any given day. And that's why I can understand why the bookmakers are finding it hard to separate the two at the front of the market, even though Lady Aurelia has been so good at Ascot in recent years.
Tuesday, or I should say Wednesday and Thursday, one Group 1 both days, Nick, and they feature two of the most likely winners, I imagine, of the week. You mentioned Cracksman for the Prince of Wales, and we can also bring up the wonderful Order of St. George, who does face some serious, you know, international campaigners in the Ascot Gold Cup. Talk about Wednesday and Thursday's Group 1s.
Well, let's start with Wednesday and the Prince of Wales Stakes. Cracksman essentially is the headline name of the week. He is the highest rated horse going into the week. He's one of the best horses in the world. He's arguably the best turf horse in the world, especially given that his stable companion, the Nabel, is currently on the sidelines. And that's predicated on his performances in the Great Vulture at York last year, in the Champion Stakes last year, when he demolished Poet's Word, running a massive final quarter mile in very soft ground, and his performance this year in the Prix Ganay, Paris-Longchamp, in which he sluiced up from rivals, including the aforementioned Rhododendron. Now, just to take the gilt off the gingerbread, he scrambled home in the Coronation Cup at Epsom. Some of his runs early last year, even when he was winning, he had a tendency to race in snatches. He tended to pick up the bridle, then drop the bridle, look less than enthusiastic, and then run on again. I think everybody thought up until last time that tendency had been ironed out, but it reared its head again at Epsom. Now, subsequently, it's been mooted that the reason he ran like that at Epsom was because he hit his head on the starting gate and ran dazed. It's simply impossible to know whether that's true or not. I mean, you may know that he's hit the head on the hard starting gate. Whether that had any impact on the way he ran his race, I have to throw that open to some doubt, because the way that he ran his race was so reminiscent of the way he ran some of his races early last season. So if the real Cracksman shows up, the others may well stay at home. But that slightly odd performance at Epsom, even in victory, has just given his rivals a glimmer of hope that particularly over a mile and a quarter on very fast ground, which it might well be on Wednesday, he could just have a sliver of vulnerability about him, which did not look likely 2 weeks ago.
Do we look to Hawkbill, Cliffs of Moher?
Well, that's the problem. There's nothing in the race good enough to beat him, even if he's not at his best. I mean, Hawkbill ran even more horribly than Cracksman did in the Coronation Cup. He looked a bit eyeballed out on that occasion. I'd want to see him calm down in the preliminaries. The horse maiden of Brian's Cliffs of Moher, he was a super run in the Derby last year, and of course he beat Cracksman in the Derby last year when he was second. But he hasn't really looked the same sort of horse since, in truth. Stepped back in the right direction last time, but he needs to run big again. I suspect the horse who will give a good account of himself and is the likeliest one to pick up the pieces if Cracksman flops his lines, sorry to mix my metaphors, is Poet's Word. You know he's going to run. He's consistent. He's versatile as regards to the ground. He's got stacks of form at the track, and at a reasonable price. If Cracksman flunks, then Poet's Word could fly.
some thoughts about the Gold Cup and the amazing Order of St. George.
Well, here's the thing. Order of St. George is considered to be in better form this year than he was last year when he was beaten by Big Orange. His jockey thinks he should have beaten Big Orange last year, and the race didn't pan out right for him. And whichever way you slice it, he got pretty damn close to him. So he gave a very good account of himself. He'd won the race the year before, of course. And it may well be that he's in better order this time. Certainly that's what the vibe from Ballydoyle is that he's been training better, that he's just in better condition. And his two prep runs have been excellent. He's had two, they've managed to get two prep runs into him this year. Well, he's not going to have a problem with the ground. He's got bottomless stamina, but he's also got a touch of class. He's got all the attributes you need for the highest class staying racehorse. On the flip side of that coin, he's facing two horses, the calibre of which he didn't face in the race last year or the year before. One is the Zirabad, who's quirky but hugely talented, needs a finesse ride from Sumion, but often gets one, triple Dubai Gold Cup winner. And the other one is Stradivarius, who won the Queen's Vase at Royal Ascot last year, was absolutely devastating in the Yorkshire Cup. And don't forget, one of the horses he kicked into the long grass in the Yorkshire Cup, and kicked him into the long grass with Call to Mind, who made mincemeat of his rivals, as you saw in the Belmont Invitational Gold Cup last weekend. So Stradivarius is a hugely exciting stayer, still on the upgrade. Zirabad is a grand old-timer from France who wins races as he likes, but it needs a bit of a finesse ride. And Order of St. George is the luxury liner, the luxury staying racehorse who loves Ascot and has run huge races the last two Gold Cups. It's a hell of a race.
The two races, the two group ones on Friday, Nick, they both seem very wide open, the Commonwealth and the Coronation.
Well, in the Coronation Stakes, which is a group one race restricted to fillies, three-year-olds, so the classic fillies generation, we've got a slightly idiosyncratic front of the market because we've got a filly who's favourite who finished ninth on her last run, and that was Clemmy. But everybody knows that a mark of Aidan O'Brien's supremacy over the years has been his ability to do things unconventionally. Clemmy was a champion European juvenile filly. She was very good last year. She won a brace of Group 1. She's a full sister to Churchill. She looked uncomplicated. She had a training hold-up early in her classic preparation, which meant she could only run in the Irish guineas and not the English guineas. And let's put it this way. She was there to do her best, but she definitely wasn't fully tuned up for the Irish guineas. That would have certainly put a bit of condition on her, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if she made a massive leap forward. I think she is the likeliest winner. I know people will think it's weird, but she is going to make massive improvement from that first run back. The horse that finished eight places in front of her is vying for favouritism Alpha Centauri, who does love fast ground, but I don't think she's got much improvement in her off the curragh. And the one that will probably be unfairly overlooked because she was 66-1 when she won the Newmarket 1000 guineas is Bilston Brook, who's outrun her pedigree, outrun her odds, surprised everybody, but there was nothing in the manner of a victory that suggested it was a fluke. The race has already worked out pretty well. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see her run big again, particularly as it was at Newmarket, if the ground stays on the far side. So I think they're the ones to be interested in there. If you're going to nail me down, I'd say Clemmy's the likeliest winner. And the Commonwealth Cup, well, last year we had Caravaggio, Blue Point, and Harry Angel fighting out the finish of this. I'm not sure this race is quite as strong this year, but Aidan O'Brien's got another son of Scat Daddy, Sioux Nation, who won the Norfolk Stakes last year. I'd say he is the likeliest winner of that race, though James Tate's Invincible Army is a very, very hardy little horse. He's a real little warrior, tries his heart out, loves Ascot. The faster they go, the stronger he'll be coming home, and he's certainly one to consider at a slightly bigger price. And, of course, there's American representation in the race as well.
A couple of things. You mentioned Harry Angel. He will headline the Saturday Standard, the Jubilee. The two-year-olds, Nick, a quick survey. There's at least one group race each day for the two-year-olds, and the Coventry, the Queen Mary, the Norfolk, and the Albany, plus the Chesham and the Windsor Castle, the listed stakes, and here is Wesley Ward seemingly primed, and on Wednesday in the Queen Mary, Heath is making out that that's his best chance, the Chelsea Cloisters.
I spent a very entertaining morning with Wesley Ward, Steve. as you observed when you saw the picture I posted on Twitter of me getting on a horse for the first time in 20 years. Said horse being the 2009 Winter Carfel Stakes winner Strike the Tiger. So anything for a cheap thrill. I don't think I'm going to be making Ryan Moore, William Buick, Frankie Dettori, John Velazquez, Javier Castellano, Mike Smith quaking their boots just yet. But it was quite a thrill anyway. I digress. He's got some amazing two-year-olds to fire at these races again. All fillies this time, four fillies. Looks like Chelsea Cloisters is the best one. He seems very confident she'll run a huge race in the Queen Mary. Interestingly, he wants to separate the fillies out a little bit. So he runs one in the Albany, one in the Norfolk Stakes, and one in the Windsor Castle. And all those three fillies he runs in those races will all get sex allowances because they're running against Colt. And the filly in the Norfolk Stakes, Shang Shang Shang, looks to have a pretty decent chance as well. They'd be the two Wesley juveniles I think I'd be most interested in. But he's got his team in a beautiful spot this year, both geographically and in terms of their own mindset. And Lady Aurelia looks fabulous. Dear old undrafted, 8 years old. He's primed to run a big race again. And I think he quite fancies the horse. He's running in the Royal Hunt Cup as well. I think Ryan Moore will ride that horse. And he showed last year that he can win races on the straight mile at Ascot as well as winning sprint races. So, yeah, loads to look forward to, I think. Loads and loads to look forward to.
Very much. And we always look forward to this preview and the chance to talk, Nick. Before we go, you did allude to the Queen's winner going back to the Belmont Festival. That was a thrill to see her silks all the way around the 2 mile Gold Cup. Your thoughts about Gronkowski's effort? We had talked about him earlier in the winter, and your final thoughts about Justify as well.
How could you be anything other than pleased with Gronkowski's effort? Contrary to what I've read in various places, I thought it was kind of the only ride he could be given that it was his first spin on the main track in the United States. I thought he ran really well. He's clearly brimful of promise. He's a horse with the physique to make you think that he's going to keep getting better and better and better. I don't think it's going to surprise too many people if he ends up being a sensational four-year-old if they want to go around again with him next year. And frankly, why wouldn't you? He's in the right hands. That was a terrific run the other day. And now he's had that experience under his belt. You think he'd be sharper out of the gate and just get into his stride more easily in calmer waters. He could pick up grade ones as he liked, you'd think. So I thought it was a superb run, particularly given the way the race panned out. It all dropped so beautifully for Justify. It's interesting, isn't it? Justify looked standout earlier in the season. He's won the Triple Crown. How can you crab the horse? Yeah, you couldn't say he's been significantly impressive in any leg of the Triple Crown. And it may well be that it's later in the campaign that he produces that singular marquee performance to really set the seal on his career as a racehorse, because we all imagine that he's not going to be around next year. He's not going to be around racing next year anyway. That's what we assume. So you sort of hope that he can finish it all off with a real signature performance. Not to decry anything he's done, because we know how difficult it is to do. But you just want to see something special now, I think, to finish it all off. I don't know what you think, Steve.
I understand that perspective. I think it's a singularly unique achievement. What he's done in short order with the late start to his career, and I want to see him leave the stage ultimately having impressed, you know, everyone who likes the sport.
Yeah.
and enjoys. He's a marvel, and Baffert and Smith, it's a really a head-shaking achievement.
It's remarkable, absolutely remarkable what they've done, and he's a beautiful specimen as well. And as you say, it's such a challenge to do what he's done and come through it successfully. And don't forget, we're going into the Triple Crown. We're talking about way better judges than me. We're saying this is the strongest group of three-year-old colts we've assembled in America for decades. So it's difficult to say that going into the Triple Crown and then come out of the Triple Crown and say, yeah, well, you know, it was all right.
Exactly.
We're all sort of trying to butter our bread on both sides a little bit. He's a flashy horse. But as I say, I just want him to run that massive time figure. I want him to blow his opposition apart and do something that will provide, you know, the concrete evidence for everybody that he was a great racehorse of the ages, rather than a horse who bumped into some ordinary opposition in Triple Crown race. I don't think the opposition was ordinary, but as you say, it's more of a question of you kind of want him to show what he can do to everybody and convince everybody of his standing in the pantheon of good thoroughbreds. I must have contradicted myself at least 18 times in the last couple of minutes, but I think you get what the gist of what I was saying.
Well, we don't have to do anything other than expect a standout performance next week, Tuesday through Saturday, NBC and on the ITV feed. Nick Luck, always a treat, and we'll be so looking forward to next week's Royal Ascot. Nick, thanks as always.
Always good to chat, Steve. Thanks so much.
I can't say thank you enough to Nick Luck, who we just
a pleasure to listen to. We're going to stay right here, and I did not do any justice here to Rick, Rick, I'm sorry, just a couple of minutes here to wrap up, 4 minutes or so, but the stage is yours after having come to New York, and you saw what you came there to see.
Sure did. Sure did, Steve. As you know, we talked. It's just been a short run, 112 days for most, but 115 for me because that was entry day for the maiden race. But we did come, or I came, and everybody else saw what, even though they didn't want to admit it, that this horse could do it, he did it. And it was, it was a great weekend for me to come and, you know, be with a bunch of friends, including you, and enjoy it out there at Belmont Park. It was a great day.
What have you heard since coming home? Plus, fold in, you know, you took, I'm going to put that picture up. You took as cool a picture of Bob Baffert and Jill and Bodie and Jimmy Ventura. That celebration photo is, to me, as you said, it's the defining photograph of the moment.
Well, obviously, somebody sent that to me because I'm the only guy in the background of that picture that's actually looking forward and watching the end of the race because I didn't need to celebrate because I knew it was going to happen. Everyone was jumping up and down. It was funny. Jimmy goes, "Well, you were." I said, "Yeah, I'm watching the end of the race." And everybody else was going nuts. But it was kind of ironic that we're at the races all day and then like 20 minutes before the Belmont, whoever was sitting next to us got cleaned out. We turned around. And there's Bob and his family in the box right next to us. Of course he's sitting next to us. How else would it end? It's the only way to... it was kind of like the way it's supposed to be. And then, of course, he's coming home. I just sent out a little tweet here this morning, took a picture of the van that we decorated with Justify and had it next to the van we decorated for American Pharoah, and with a little comment that he is returning home here on Sunday, and he's going back into the same stall that American Pharoah was in. And so that stall in the last four or five years has held American Pharoah, Arrogate, and Justify. So we have to turn that into a shrine. It's the next horse that goes in there, you might want to put a couple bucks on.
Yeah, there you go. And we can, next week in advance of what probably be a parade, we can talk a little bit more about the whole story, and you can bring us back to, you know, each of those steps. But since you've been home, what kind of comments? I'm curious back at Santa Anita, how everybody viewed, you know, what they saw and the reaction to the race.
Well, to tell you the truth, you know, I didn't get home until Sunday, so we really only had one day of racing here. But, you know, the buzz around the backside here is, I don't know, it's at a certain level, but I hate to say it, but, you know, we've had, I'll Have Another, we had California Chrome, we had American Pharoah, we had Justify, you know, those Derby winners in the past 6-7 years here, hate to say it's, you know, not as, you know, as it maybe as exciting as it would be other places, but, you know, we've had a lot of good horses stable here, run here, you know, leave here and do good and come back. So, but this horse has a little bit more of a buzz to it because he was a Santa Anita Derby winner as well as a couple of his other ones were too. So whereas American Pharoah did his Derby campaigning in his 3-year-old year, not here, but Justify was more visible here on the scene. So I think when he comes in on Sunday, of course it's going to be in the middle of the races, and we're doing the old police escort, the sirens, and the helicopter, and the press will be here, which will be kind of neat. But that's going to be a little private thing because it'll be in the backside. But when he parades on Saturday, closing Saturday, I think that's when the people will really show their love, and I think we'll really see a pretty good reaction. So very excited about that. Good. I mean, it's a kind of a great way to end the meet. This kind of horse kind of carried us through the end of the meet, gave us something to look forward to every few weeks. So, and it's going to end that way as well.
Well, and quickly, Summertime Oaks tomorrow. You've also got the Rainbow in there, as well as the Siren Lure on Father's Day.
Yeah, so, you know, a few good stakes coming up. I think we're going to end on a high note. Last year, I think we kind of limped to the finish. Had a couple cancellations late, but, you know, our turf guy, Jesse's just done a great job keeping this. You watch that, our turf course on TV, it looks like opening day. So they've done a great job to help us run a lot more turf racing, which is what the fans want. And I think we've really stepped it up a notch this meet. But we can wrap up a little bit more next week. I mean, Doug O'Neill has just been on fire this past month. He's the leading trainer right now by 6 over D'Amato and Miller, and Flavian Pratt has done well. He leads here by 4 over Joe Talamore and Giovanni Franco, despite taking off a few weekends to ride out of town. So it's been a good late meet, and always helped by the Triple Crown races, and always help when you get a Triple Crown winner too. So been good, and like you say, maybe next week we will get a little deeper.
We'll pull it all together. And Rick, enjoy the day with your dad.
Will do. Thank you very much.
Rick Hammerly, everybody, and just in time to pull up, and hope everybody has a wonderful Father's Day with your dad, your uncle, your brother, whatever father figure you've got in your life. I'm going to be lucky to spend my dad for his 89th birthday as well on Sunday. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday. Marty McGee, Rich Migliori, Nick Tamara, Ron Paolucci, Ed DeRosa, Rick Hammerly, and the brilliant Nick Luck. Talk to you Monday, everybody. Thanks.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.